From Social Service to SG,
I'm Jing Yang, co-hosting this episode with Isaac Neo. Since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic in Singapore, the living conditions and well-being of migrant workers have received increased attention. At the same time, and consequently too, during the country's first circuit breaker in 2020, there was an intense flurry of volunteerism and donations among concerned Singaporeans. However, since then, over the past 2 years, public attention on both migrant workers and voluntary contributions has waxed and waned. With Michael Chia, Executive Director of HealthServe, we discuss these phenomena and explore future advocacy and strategies.
Okay, so hi, yes, so good morning, Michael. Thanks for joining us today. Glad to have you on the podcast.
Yep, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yep, so just to jump in, maybe I'll just ask you to give a quick introduction into your experience at HealthServe and your motivations for first joining. I believe you were a volunteer from 2010 and then you became their executive director in 2018. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. No, you've really done your homework. So, yeah, I've always been passionate in serving and supporting the marginalized community, those who are really in the fringe, right? So, rightly pointed out, I started with them as a volunteer because of a guy by the name of Dr. Tan Lai Yong. So, Lai Yong was instrumental in the sense that he introduced me to HealthServe way back in 2010. I remember my first task was just to serve a glass of water to a migrant worker, and that kind of sparked conversation. And then, you know, I thought that that's so much more than that we can do. And rightly pointed out as well. So through the years, as I was volunteering, we did quite a lot of things. I started being very, very involved, I think back in 2014, and we opened several clinics during that time. And I guess I was supporting them in starting some of the operations as well. So it's been a wonderful journey with them, I think. And back in 2018, when there was a need for an executive director, the founder, Dr. Goh Wei Leong, whom I also know as a friend, asked whether or not I was keen. Now, I was telling him, I didn't really wanted to start off as an ED. I wanted to just go as a caseworker or a social worker. I'm not even casework or social work trainer, but I say, just give me a smallest, lowest role, it's fine. But they say, no, please come as an ED. We need you as an ED. I said, okay. So that's been almost 4.5 years being with them. So it's been a wonderful journey. I mean, and they have a wonderful team. The team has been awesome. So yeah, 4.5 years passed really quickly for us because of that.
Okay. Yeah, as you mentioned, it sounds like quite a journey to us. You mentioned they expanded throughout the years. They've set up multiple clinics. I guess from your perspective, how has that expansion gone? How has it been from expanding from just a small clinic to having multiple clinics? I understand you do more casework, you do more engagement with the migrant workers in terms of like telecounseling and so on. How has that gone from your point of view?
Well, we grew from a very small one clinic in Geylang back in 2006. Actually, our first clinic started in 2007. We started in Geylang where we served the communities around that area. And we expanded relatively quickly after that as well. Back in, we opened one center in somewhere in the west, in Papan area, where we actually have a casework center back in 2009 and 2010. We also opened a Tai Seng center because, you know, that was back when there was a need for different activities as well. I guess where I'm coming from is HealthServe, we expanded very, very fast, rapidly during the early days. And we have really gone through an area of, you know, divergence where we wanted to serve and do everything to serve the community at large of the migrant worker community. And then when it comes to resourcing, that was a challenge that most of us faced, right? So that was when we engaged a lot of our communities. We actually spoke to our volunteers. We got in a lot of people, the churches was actually one of the first few support structure that HealthServe started with, right? And what happened was in our expansion plan, we also realized that we became very diluted in the things that we do. So back in 2011, the question came as, should we then from divergence come into convergence of the things that we do, be a little bit more focused of what we want to do and what are our core and why we formed HealthServe in the first place. And so that started a lot of conversations during that time. So back in 2014, 15, you know, rather than expanding on the other areas of social welfare, it was very much medical. So there was a clinic open. We started the dental clinics. We opened a medical clinic in the dormitories. And then in 2018, when I joined, we converged even further. So we looked into our area of expertise and the things that we're supposed to do and not supposed to do. And then we realized that, okay, maybe some of the things are not our strengths. So other people will be much better. So we actually closed down our centers in Taixing, and we actually have some of our casework centers that was in the other dormitories. We closed that down as well. And what happened was we looked into the area of needs and our expertise and what we can do, right? And we realized that there are some of the things which is important. Mental health was a very big thing. And we realized also that mental health was not something which the migrant worker community have helped, you know, been helped. And no one was really looking into this area. Everyone thinks, you know, mental health was a topic, kind of like a sexy topic, but nobody did anything about it. So what we did was we then decided to start a new program for the mental health, just looking at the well-being of the migrant worker community in Singapore. And we did a very comprehensive study. And we realized that, wow, these guys, the anxiety and the things that they go through is very high. But and what do we do with it? So we formed a team. We actually started that. And we actually have also, because of that, we realized that the expansion towards the crisis, the helpline, the mental health program, there were a lot of other avenues of help that's required. So COVID-19 shown that, you know, the severity of and the seriousness of how fragile the migrant workers are in, you know, in Singapore, the community, right? Because, you know, they don't have really a support structure in Singapore. When they're here, they're foreigners, foreign land. It's a lot harder to just rely on friends alone. It's sufficient to a certain level, but it breaks down the moment you need a very severe support, right? And that was what happened. And we realized that, wow, that's something which we need to come in. And that was how we started our telecounseling as well. We started providing sessions. We got in a lot of volunteers during that time, also as befrienders, and we have our 24-hour crisis helpline just for that, because we wanted to make sure that we always have an avenue for any questions from the migrant workers that we can be a support to. So yeah, we've really expanded, right? You can see in a sense from divergence early on to do everything. And then we converge into very specific on health-related focus, where we want to do holistic health, not just the physical, we also support the emotional, the mental health. And now we are slightly diverging again into the areas of need within this space of the health and well-being of the migrant workers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. No, that's interesting. Like hearing about like HealthServe's journey and how you guys have deliberately chosen to focus on more specific areas to help migrant workers. And I think, yeah, you've touched on mental health and the initiatives or services that HealthServe has for them. I was just wondering, just as a follow-up question, like on your end, you know, HealthServe has pivoted to focusing on these, helping the migrant workers in this aspect. What more do you think needs to be done from, let's say, a policy perspective? Because you've mentioned, you know, it's a sexy topic, but there's no support structure in place for them.
Yeah. So one of the greatest challenge, I think, is for any workers to really desiring help is the fear of not being able to continue working. Now, I'm not talking about the medium to severe cases where, you know, we do have workers who have hallucination, you know, and all those things. Those are the things that we believe they require intervention and treatment for help, right? I think because of the mental health issue, it's not really supported by the employers in terms of, or nor is it covered by any insurance care. So no worker will actually come and seek treatment even if then an early onset of any issues that they face. None of them will actually even want to do it. So there are two major reasons. One is affordability. Second one is the stigmatization. So I don't think it's just a policy issue. I think it is more about how then do we normalize a conversation. There are a lot of things that can be done. So having situation where education is a starting point and a bedrock to frame how people think, it takes a lot of the actors to come on board to really be part of this community to elevate this concern and normalize the conversation, you know, within the migrant worker space and within the Singapore community for them as well. So for the migrant worker, it's a little bit more challenging in the sense that they have first to overcome the challenge of normalizing the conversation within their own community, which is already very difficult, and then to be able to have their conversations within Singapore to allow Singaporeans to accept them having this severe anxiety, severe distress, or whatever conversations that they may need to with their Singaporean counterparts or bosses. So it's a two-step for them. So it's a little bit harder, right? Or it's not harder, it's a little bit more. That's the reason why we always felt that they are marginalized in this area, or at least they have a greater hurdle to overcome. Because every time we do something, they have to do it two or three steps further or more just to get the result. I don't believe that policy will change, will actually elevate this. I believe more in a community thing that will actually support this. It will never go away. It's, you know, we are not here to solve this because we know that it won't, but we are here to hopefully have some, you know, we talk about moving the needle, even if it's a 10% shift of improving the society well-being. That would be a very, you know, wonderful thing, because this 10% shift can result in a very big, you know, impact, we believe, towards the community of the migrant workers within their own community and for them to be living in Singapore.
One thing that came to mind when you were talking earlier about, you know, moving from divergence to convergence, right, is you're looking around. And one of the questions I had, which came to mind as a follow-up, would be, that would mean communicating actively with the other organizations in the migrant worker space, right? I know during the pandemic you alluded to, there were so many of these coalitions. I'm wondering, what does it look like right now? Because it's not, clearly there's still issues, but it's not as acute as it was at the point in time. So what does communication look like among different migrant worker agencies and organizations? And how do y'all communicate, and what happens in these kind of platforms or channels?
Yeah, you know, one of the silver lining of the COVID-19 was that they built bonds and friendships and partnerships that are stronger than just work. So we have grown really, really close, actually. I just had lunch with one of the team and we were just talking through that. I say, you know what, we wouldn't really know each other well if not for the COVID-19 and for the work that we do. It's true. So we are still speaking and engaging each other, and then trying to see if there are any goals that we want to work on or projects that we want to work on together. In fact, there is one that we may start. It's called You Are Not Forgotten. It is a work that one of our partners, he's very passionate about this. He says that in all the work that the migrant worker do or has done in Singapore should not be forgotten. And he just wants to collect all the stories of the people and you know, it's still work in progress. We have not really started, but the conversation has started. The vision and mission is very clearly listed. And the values of why we are doing this is it has been drafted, right? It's still work in progress. So we have actually developed bonds and friendship that is not just a collaborative model, actually, where we collaborate with one another about a certain effort or work or whatever it is. We are really now deepening the partnerships and starting new framework kind of thing. So that's been interesting for me. And it's not just with the other NGOs. We actually have a very strong synergy with the Ministry of Manpower as well. I'm very thankful for them for really, you know, being open and having conversations with us as well. I know we are not always aligned in everything that we do, but we are able to share our perspectives very openly with one another. And we respect that there will be challenges. We respect there will be diverse views. But, you know, to be able to have at least a voice on the table makes a big difference and to be heard. So I think that's been continuing. And we have the partnership, in very, very strong partnership with the MOM ACE team as well. To the extent that our team members and the MOM ACE team members, they talk almost daily, you know, especially on a special case. So example, like if there's a migrant brother who has been injured and there's some issues that need to be addressed, and they know that this cannot be addressed on only from one side, MOMAs together with our casework team, and sometimes the employers are involved to see what are the best next steps to be given for a migrant brother. So that's been wonderful. So that still continues even up to today.
And I guess that's interesting because I'm also thinking about the fact that you started as a volunteer, and there's this big conversation about volunteerism, especially in the COVID-19 context, right? We kind of learn from other platforms that you have about 150 volunteers at any point in time with HealthServe, but really you need about 300 to 400 volunteers to be sustainable, right? And of course, we remember that when the pandemic first struck, there was this flurry of activity. There were so many people involved. There were so many people willing to help. But we also know from the individual giving survey from the National Volunteer and Philanthropy Center that the rate has gone down quite significantly since then. You know, people lose interest, people have their own lives. So I guess a way of asking this question is, how is the volunteerism situation or volunteer situation for HealthServe right now based on the numbers? And how would you assess the situation now that we've opened up for some time? Has the numbers recovered? Where do you project it to be? And what are some of the opportunities or challenges associated with getting volunteers?
I think when you mentioned about the 150 volunteers and we need 300 volunteers, that it's related to our crisis helpline volunteer, our 24-hour crisis helpline. We still need that many. We are still struggling to reach that number. And the number has reduced because there are certain changes, right? I mean, people are going back to work in the office and they still want to volunteer. They actually written in to us and say that, you know, I really want to continue. It's just that now there's a bit of adjustments required. They need to go back to the office and they need to see how is it like to go back to a certain normalcy and certain routine. Therefore, they have written and asked whether or not they can take a 2 months break. So from 150, actually, now we're down to maybe just about 110 to maybe 100 volunteers that are supporting the crisis helpline. Overall, our volunteer base have been stable, but it depends a lot on the specialization and the roles. We have many befrienders and we're very thankful for them. To be honest with you, I think we have about 600 to 700 befrienders that comes in and out from our centers, and they play a very critical role in bridging communities, right? We have about 120 doctors that is on our list. However, the medical doctors are tired. They have been working really, really, really hard throughout the COVID-19 pandemic. So active volunteers are probably in the range of 40 to 50 now. We are very short of dentists. So I'm doing a call out to any dentist, anyone who is willing to come and volunteer with us. We are really short of dentists. We have a wait list of nearly 4 to 5 months now because of, you know, the needs are great. We have 2 dental chairs. We open, you know, every night. But even that, because of the shortage of dentists, we're not able to fill the dental chairs to serve the migrant workers. how I see in terms of the number of volunteers and whether the swing of up and down, it really depends a lot on the situation on their side. And it's okay because, you know, volunteers will really need to adjust their situation and circumstances now that they're going back to work, or at least not going back to work, but they are going back to the office to work. It requires adjustments. Now that the borders are opening up, people who have not been traveling, they really need a break. They just want to travel, right? So I think it is not unexpected. We kind of know this is going to happen, but we just remind the volunteers that say, once you have reached stabilized phase, right, when you are ready to come back, please remember us. Please come back because we really need you. It's not that we can't, and it is really that we struggle without the support of any of the volunteers that we have.
Okay, that's an interesting like perspective. I guess I had like two sort of follow-up questions. One is a question within a question. Because in the same study that Jin Yao mentioned, we also saw that there was a finding that they were, although the rates of volunteerism went down, we saw small increases in informal or community-led giving in terms of volunteering and donations, which I guess like matches your observation. You know, a lot of people have gone back to work. They can't devote as much time as they did volunteering and so on. So I guess I wanted to ask, how do you think organizations can turn these, you know, acts of informal giving into more formal acts of joining organizations to help them? But also, I think something that just came up was, do you see a distinction, you know, between informal giving and, you know, formally joining organizations as a volunteer? Is this like a meaningful distinction to you?
Well, I guess every act of kindness is always appreciated, be it informal or a formal act of moving movements. Whether I see a big differentiation, maybe I'll address that question first. I think I would prefer for a person or an organization to come on board officially and let us get to know you, because it is a community that we are building. It is engagement which we hope to share. It is a joy that we want to be able to talk about, you know, when we have news stories and when we hear of, you know, feedback from on the ground of the impact that we've created. We wish to share with everyone that we know, because then that is community, right? We share the joy and the sorrow and the grief together. When it becomes informal, I guess sometimes it's a touch and go. It therefore becomes very transactional at times. Not that it's not appreciated, it's just that it's less of a relationship that, you know, HealthServe always believes in. Then how do we encourage the rest of them to come in on a journey with us? I've always asked people that, you know, don't serve a cause, adopt an organization, because you grow with the organization. You can adopt many organizations, you know, but you adopt one and to whichever bandwidth that you can and able to, and journey with them and see how they've grown. So I can share this because I started with HealthServe back in 2010. I really saw how the journey grew. And I know the struggles that they faced, the tears that, you know, and the sweat and everything that went through behind closed doors, because I journeyed with them. I was able to just say that, yeah, this is really an organization that really loves the community, really loves the migrant workers as well, and really want to do what's best for Singapore. And so, and I would also encourage corporates to do the same. Don't fund programs. Fund the organization. Allow them to grow, because if you believe that the cause is a good cause and you believe that the organization has the ability to do so, then enable it, you know, rather than providing just program-specific fundings, which, you know, within 1 or 2 years, and it's very, very KPI-driven, and then the outcomes are very fuzzy. You don't really know what happened at the end of the day. Have you really achieved an impact or not? Grow and journey with the organization. Then you really see the impact, because the impact doesn't come immediately, right? It will take 2 to 3 years, some even 4 to 5 years, just to see some change that you really believe in. And if the organization and the corporate organizations or the individuals believe in this, then they want to see the change, then adopt the organization. So questions that people should ask are not just, oh, what do you do? Questions that people should ask are, what are your values? What are your vision? What do you want to see? What is the change that you hope to see? And how are you able to do it? What are your resources? What are your levers? How are you leveraging? And have these conversations with all the charity organizations, have the conversations with any of the people that you believe in wanting to serve, and even have conversations with that you hope to see change, and is this organization really doing the change for you? Then you can decide, yeah, this is a place that I really want to sink my roots in and I just want to help. So just to share with you, and though I'm in health serve, I'm working here, I'm volunteering in 2 other agencies as well. So I don't just work here now. I volunteer. So I also get to know the other agencies and what they do and what are the things that, because I believe in the cause that they're doing, I really wish and I just want to be of help and support, you know. So whichever time that I have left, I will go in. So it's nothing small. It doesn't have to be big things. I just enjoy just doing the smallest of things. And that's where you start to really hear the most beautiful stories ever in the organization.
No, that's great. Yeah, I love the line that you mentioned, you know, don't just serve a cause, adopt an organization. And I think you are, you know, living proof of that motto. So yeah, thanks for that. Yeah, I just wanted to move on. So I think I wanted to chat a little bit about, you know, the advocacy element of HealthServe. So I think HealthServe has worked very closely and interacted with the migrant workers over the past 2 years, you know, during COVID, so on. And of course, one of the big issues has been the restrictions in the migrant worker dormitories, the movement restrictions. While that's mostly relaxed for now, some of them still need passes for the more popular areas, but by and large, they're mostly relaxed. I guess I wanted to, you know, get a sense from your perspective, what have you been hearing from them over the past 2 years? And, you know, you mentioned communicating this with MOM, other stakeholders. How do you effectively communicate the perspectives from the migrant workers to, I guess, like the other stakeholders, other organizations, MOM, and so on?
You know, there's one another stakeholder that we need to include in this area is the employers. So their views matters to the workers as well. And when we speak to the worker, right, then hey, I guess, hey, how you buy? How, where you going? You know, like weekend, what you plan to do? Kind of thing. Most of them will go like, well, nothing lah, buy, just staying home, room, sleeping, you know. I say, why? Say, oh, because, you know, my boss sometimes say, stay home safer. If I catch COVID, then the whole company down, then no man working. No man working, we all know no pay. So we all stay room better. And so a lot of them don't travel very far. They don't really go very far. And rightly so, because they were afraid. Early on in the, you know, even though we have starting the easing measures and allowing workers to come out, not many do initially because they are really just want to be socially responsible for their community and for the work, because they are really worried about, you know, bread and butter. They want to be salaried. They are paid daily, right? They are not you know, they earn when they work, so by daily wage. Obviously, that is actually one of the things that we then try to see what else can we do. Advocacy doesn't only mean that what we think it's best. You know, advocacy for us means doing the right thing at the right time for them. So in our conversations, usually it's really with the masses. So, and we also feedback to Ministry of Manpower as well about, you know, yes, these are the feedback, but we also want to highlight about the well-being of the workers when you know as well as that there are some workers who have really felt very trapped. They have not been able to go out. And sometimes all this additional burden of external voices and say, hey, don't go out. You know, if you go out, then you catch COVID, you cause the team to get COVID and none of us get paid kind of thing. It's additional stress, right? These are not just a regular thing, and you don't want to be, you know, the person who caused all these things, right? So we provide such feedback as well. We also inform the employers. I said, you know, we need to have some breaks. So what are the things that we can do? There are no right or wrong answers here, I believe. The good thing is that the ministry has relaxed and enabled workers to go out. Rightly pointed out, I don't understand why they limit some popular places, but that's another side conversation. But they're allowing them to go to the recreational centers. They're allowing them to go to any areas that, you know, to meet their families and loved ones. Then how then do we enable this for them to go out without feeling guilty, without feeling or being afraid, right? So we actually started having events, actually, very close events. We actually brought them out. And this was in partnership with many, many other charity organizations. If you can see, it's a very targeted, very regulated event that we brought these people out. So just to show them that it's actually not that bad, it's actually pretty okay. Allowing the employers to see as well, it's not that bad. People are okay. And now with new change of the policy that, you know, you only need to self-quarantine yourself for 5 days and then you can go back to work, I think employers are also more receptive towards, hey, okay, yeah, guys, just go because it's really for your well-being. Please go. So where are we now towards our advocacy and how we're doing things, right? We HealthServ don't believe in outright championing of certain things. Our model is really to work within, because first, we really want to understand the crux of the matter and why are workers afraid, or if we were to push for a certain change, is it really good for you? Is it good for the country? Is it good for the employers? And then we have these conversations. And through that, we actually allow the conversations to happen. We try to be the voice for the workers, especially if they are afraid to share to the employers and to the ministry. But we always allow the workers themselves to voice it because we believe that their voices are more powerful and it's good for them to be able to do so. And we wanted it to be done closed doors. So then they can actually share what they really feel, what they really think, how they believe that this can or cannot help me, you know. So that's how we work towards. What I think currently with the easing measures, I think it's a wonderful thing. I think it's a move in the right direction. I believe it's probably the right time to not have any distinction on any of the four places that is restricted today. Yeah, so that's my view anyway.
I just want to make, my mind's not a question, but a comment. I mean, I agree with the not having a distinction of the restrictions, but I think the bigger point that you were getting at, which I am also appreciating by listening to you, is I didn't fully appreciate the amount of guilt that as I described, like guilt that the workers would feel. It's almost implicit, like it's from the employers, but not just from the employers as well, right? But also from your fellow co-workers as well, who might put pressure upon you to not go out and all these things. And what that says to me is, it's important not just to pay attention to the broad government policy, but see how it unfolds on the ground itself, which I think is a reflection of how, or rather the proximity that HealthServ has to the workers. Because essentially, this is what the workers are telling you, what they're experiencing. And I don't think Singaporeans in general fully appreciate that nuance in that sense sometimes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, yes. Isaac. I cut in Isaac. So go ahead, Isaac.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah, I know. I totally agree with Jinyoung. That's something that, yeah, I think definitely should be acknowledged. So thanks for speaking about that, Michael. Yeah. So I think just one last question from us. So, and you alluded to it, I think, earlier on. So I think you mentioned, you know, it's good for migrant workers to voice out their concern, you know, directly because they themselves know their experiences best. And so going back to, you know, the study that we mentioned just now, one thing we noted is that it only counts Singaporeans, you know, when we talk about rates of volunteering and so on. And migrant workers, which are a very large group in Singapore, are not included in that study. I guess from my perspective, you know, I know HealthServe, you know, helps to train migrant workers as peer support leaders for psychological first aid in the dormitories. But do you think, you know, migrant organizations in the migrant worker sector can and should involve migrant workers more in their organizations? Are there any, you know, barriers that you see that might be, that might affect this in your view?
Oh, no, Isaac, you know, I support this 100%. In fact, in HealthServe, we actually, the things that I asked the team to do is to really get the migrant workers to volunteer with us. We actually have a large pool of migrant worker volunteers as our befrienders. They are our translators, befrienders. In fact, they are actually some of the ones who supports our programs, you know, in the outings and all that. It should have their stake in it because, you know, we are helping a sector where we believe that, you know, they are the best people to rise up and support their community as well. I've always shared with people about, you know, far culture, near culture, and same culture concept. For a Singaporean to reach out to, say, a Bangladeshi migrant worker or an Indian migrant worker or even a worker from China, a Chinese migrant worker. So how does this far culture, near culture, same culture concept works? To me, towards the South Asians, I'm a far culture. Even though I know them well, I'm far culture. I don't really understand to a certain degree. Maybe an Indian Singaporean to an Indian migrant worker, it's a near culture because some similarities, but not the same. But an Indian migrant worker coming from the same place, same country, it's the same culture concept. They will be able to understand the nuances. They will be able to understand the culture behind, the thinking behind why the person do a certain things. And they'll be able to express it and share with us. And by then, right, allowing each other to understand why we behave or react a certain way. So it is through this really knowledge and understanding and having this ability to know really will bond and integrate society much, much better. Because most of the time we are judged by the things we do, right? We just do this. Oh, the person goes, oh, why are you like that? No, why are you so like that? I can't think. Singlish is bad, right? So, and I think we fail to realize that behind the behavior, there's a value system that we hold. And the value system sometimes comes from the cultural background that we grew up with. How we see things, how we value things come from there, right? And then if you don't understand that area, it becomes very difficult. So we believe very much in getting the migrant workers to come on to volunteer with us and then run the program for us, with us. One of my desire, actually, and we are almost there, we're not there yet, is to have migrant worker work in HealthServe. We actually have a team who are from India working in HealthServe. We actually have people from Bangladesh working in HealthServe. We have people from Vietnam working in HealthServe. We have people from Philippines working in HealthServe. So we are quite multinational because we believe they are the ones who are able to translate and they are the ones who will be able to bring the society and the community together. And just to be able to pick on their brains has been wonderful for us.
And I just want to say, you know, in closing, to thank you for spending time with us. You've spoken at length about migrant worker advocacy and volunteer involvement. And I think there's so many gems, but I think the two things that stood out to me was one thing you said at the end was essentially centering the workers themselves. Like ultimately, volunteers and organizations like HealthServe can help advocate and help advance their causes, but ultimately they themselves with their lived experiences and day-to-day kind of experiences would probably know best what works best for them. And we really want to move towards the direction that HealthServe has been doing to center those voices to be a part of your organization as volunteers and hopefully as staff members down the road. I think for Singaporeans, Isaac repeated your quote, which I really like, which is don't just serve a cause, adopt an organization, right? And you listed a range of different considerations that, you know, Singapore volunteers should be thinking about: values, mission, change, resources, and so on and so forth. I think that's interesting to me because I think that creates attachment and commitment to the organization. And someone like you who has work through the ranks in terms of being a volunteer and now the ED, I think encapsulates that quite nicely as well. And so, you know, once again, thank you for your time and then all the best with your future endeavors and the organization as well. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Xing Yao.